Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Special episode number 5, part 1, Samhain 2008. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Before we start, we'd like to say a big thank you for downloading this, the first part of our holiday special, as well as all our other stories. It means an awful lot to us.
It does.
We've got such a lot for you in this part of the episode that we're going to skip the contact details, and you'll find them at the end of the show as usual. So, Gary, what have we got in this show?
Well, in this half, we'll have some great music, some stirring poetry, and a wonderful story by Kelly Heckart. So let's kick off with some news and views.
We've been having some technical difficulties caused by our server crashing, so Gary might be a bit hard to find on the net at the moment. All I can see is him crawling around on the floor with his head stuck in a sparking computer case. I don't think there's going to be any delays in our schedule, but if there is, we'll certainly let you know.
What do you mean? I'm just having a bad hair day, that's all. In other news, Iceland's leading film director, Baltasar Kormákur, I hope I've said that correctly, is preparing a film about the Vikings called Saga, which is great news. Can't wait to see it.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
In the past, we've had some great Viking films, from Kirk Douglas's The Vikings to Antonio Banderas in The 13th Warrior and just recently Pathfinder. But where are the Celtic movies? There's just as much heroism and magic in Celtic myth as there is in Norse. Come on, Hollywood, pull your fingers out.
We've also been joined by listeners in Portugal, and we'd like to send them a warm welcome.
Thanks to Aline from the High Brazil podcast, we would like to wish all of our Portuguese listeners calorosas boas-vindas to the show and boa sorte para o High Brazil podcast. Aline plays some great music, and I wish I could understand Portuguese.
That's about the High Brazil podcast, not Gary understanding Portuguese.
Details can be found in the show notes.
Well, it's Samhain, or Halloween, the time of the ancestors. But what exactly does that mean? What did it mean to the ancient Celts? As with everything to do with the ancient Celts, it's almost impossible to be absolutely certain. And if you do a web search for Samhain, you will find many different explanations of its origin. The things that they all have in common, and we can say with some degree of certainty, is that the festival marked the end of the summer and the beginning of winter, and that it was a time of the dead and the ancestors.
Thomas Rolleston, in Myths and Legends of the Celtic Race, makes it quite clear that there is evidence from the Romans that the Celts believed in the immortality of the soul and also in reincarnation. He says, Caesar said, "The principal point of the Druids' teaching is that the soul does not perish and that after death it passes from one body into another." And from Diodorus? "Among them, the doctrine of Pythagoras prevails, according to which the souls of men are immortal, and after a fixed term recommence to live, taking upon themselves a new body." Now, traces of this doctrine certainly do appear in Irish legend. Thus, the Irish chieftain Mongon, who's an historical personage, and whose death is recorded about AD 625, is said to have made a wager as to the place of death of a king named Fuad, slain in a battle with the mythical hero Finn Mac Wul in the 3rd century. He proves his case by summoning to his aid a Ruvenor, that's a spirit from the other world, Kilta, who was the actual slayer of Fuad, and who describes correctly where the tomb is to be found and what were its contents. He begins his tale by saying to Mongon, "We were with thee," and then turning to the assembly he continues, "We were with Finn, coming from Olba." "Hush," says Mongon, "it is wrong of thee to reveal a secret." The secret is, of course, that Mongon was a reincarnation of Finn.
So the Celts lived in immediate contact and constant awareness that their ancestors survived and might be around them either in body or in spirit form. Samhain is the time of year when the veils between the worlds of the dead, or spirit, and the worlds of the living are the thinnest. And what better time is there to listen to the words of our ancestors, heed the advice of their lives, and thank them for the sacrifices they've made for us?
That's right. Let's have some stomping music. This track is by Scottish Celts Saw Patrol, and it's called Aftermath. It tells of the Battle of Kinlochlochy in 1544, also known as the Battle of the Shirts, as the day was so hot that the warriors discarded their full dress and fought only in their shirts. Details of where you can find out about this battle can be found in our show notes.
guys are amazing. Not only do they make some amazing sounds, but they're all actively involved in a charity founded by their piper, Charlie. It's called the Clanranald Trust, and they are creating a medieval motte and Bailey Fort as an interactive educational visitor attraction called Duncarrow Fort, which sounds really, really good. I'd love to go and see this.
It does. I've had a look at their website. You can find details in the show notes, as usual. And I'd love to visit it. If I was nearer, I'd definitely be rolling up my sleeves and digging in.
That was a vision I didn't want to have. You with your sleeves rolled up, digging in trenches.
Do you think we should have a section on the website for details of Celtic charities like this?
I think that's an excellent idea. I'll leave you to set that up then.
So, if you're involved in a Celtic charity, let us know, and we'll put details on our site for others to find out about the work you do. Moving on, we are happy now to present two powerful poems by the modern Irish poet, Áine MacKay.
Fire of the Gaels by Áine MacKay. She is every woman who struggles for survival in a world of prisons of one form or another. Her stories, etched on the landscapes of the universe. She is the mouth of the Blackwater, the secrets of the Alder, the writing on the caves, and the shedder of light. She is the blueprints of the past, the wishes of the unborn, the spirit of the crops, and the heat of the sun bursting on buds. She is the midges on the loch, the guardian of the wells, the bones of the earth and the ties that bind by spirit and blood. She is the song sung so often, renewed on the lips of the young. Her tongue fiery can cut like an axe, or soothe like a lullaby. She is the goddess of the people, the fire on the hills. She is the shadow on the stones, glinting on the riverbeds. The breath of a new morning, and a beacon in the night. She is every woman. She is Áine, fire of the Gaels.
Misha Éire by Áine MacKay. Talk to me of bogs, of blankets on the land. Talk to me of myths you have at your command. Tell me of Cuchulain, the hero hound of Ulster, the battles of the Toyne Moor, and the warriors of Munster. The progress of the Fearbolgs, the Dedannans on the hill, remind me of our legends of folklore through the quill. Talk to me of forests, of flora and fauna there. Talk to me of mountains in Tyrone and in Kildare. Tell me now of the future, of equality in the land. Speak to me of serenity, so the tribes can understand.
Those are really super poems. Thank you, Áine.
Thank you very much. They're great.
Following on with the theme of poetry, we'll have our next piece of music with lyrics by Irish poet Nigel McLaughlin from his book Blood and a track from the Hungry Bentleys album, Closing Credits, which should be released in the next month or so. Let's listen to the Book of Invasions.
Creep over Marquish like an invader from the north, to watch the fire thawed in stone at the stroop of two hills. I have come here in winter. To hear the whispered notes of a white melody, strange from the stream's bed, like an invader from the north. To hear it echo, rise and dance through rocks at the water's fall. I have come here in winter to take the wordless air and fill it with a populace of new language, like an invader from the north. To plunder a landscape for refuge, to take possession, to find belonging, I have come here in winter, like an invader from the north. I have come here in winter.
And now we've got a fun story for you, which is an excerpt from Kelly Heckart's Ravenwolf. It's worth remembering that whilst in the Northern Hemisphere it's Samhain, in the Southern Hemisphere it's Beltane. Kelly has set her story at Beltane, but with so many echoes of Samhain, it's perfect for the season. Let's set the scene. To protect his family from harm, Ambiorix has no choice but to join the Roman army, once again commanding a cavalry unit, and torn between the soldier inside and being a husband and father. Nemu must confront a past life that is filled with betrayal, loss, and revenge. As her past life collides with her present life, she finds herself threatened by spiteful goddesses and trapped in the Celtic underworld by a god who was once obsessed with her when she was known as Bequil.
Sunset came on the eve of Beltane, in a flourish of red and orange, resembling a firestorm in the sky. Tiny stars twinkled like beacons to the other world. Ambiorix's companions gathered round him to wish him well on his journey. Berat looked to the sky, and then at Ambiorix.
The signs portend a safe journey.
He put his hand on Ambiorix's shoulder. Morrigan stood off to the side, giving him a supportive smile. Brizo waited for him at the top of the hill. He smiled at his companions and joined Brizo. Connell stood in the shadows, nodding to him. Remember to use all your senses, especially your sixth. He tapped his head. The blackbird sings of triumph. The river runs with life. The signs bode well for a successful journey. Go with the she as your light, my brother warrior. Connell flashed him an encouraging smile. A flutter of wings signalled to him that Ronwyn had been there to see him off on his journey. Remember what I told you about keeping calm. Remember the meditation exercises. Brizo looked elegant dressed in her green mantle. A fiery glow emanated from her. He nodded, taking a deep breath and exhaling.
I am ready.
He touched his tunic where his owl feather and Nemu's comb were tucked close to his heart. All he thought about was Nemu and how much he missed her. Nothing would stop him reaching her. The power Brizo had given him sparked through his veins. He carried his white shield, his three-pointed spear made of the magical yew tree, and his sword sheathed on his back. Close your eyes and imagine a white light surrounding your body. Brizo's voice was soothing, helping him to relax and concentrate. Now look for the two trees, one an oak and one a yew. Pass between these trees and walk in a straight line. You'll be met by your spirit guide, who will guide you on your journey. Her voice faded away, and Ambiorix stood alone, the night suddenly cold. Looking around, he noticed that he stood on a hill surrounded by water. Mist rose from the water, and a full moon shined serenely over the land. On the side of the hill stood a ring of stones, grey in the moonlight. Robed figures passed by the stones, holding torches that flared and smoked in the damp air. On the other side of the stones were the trees he was looking for. Ambiorix walked past the robed figures and stood in front of the trees. His senses told him that these were very old trees. He passed between the trees, and it felt like he was pulled into a strange world. Daylight filled the woodlands. It looked like a normal forest, but strange music floated from the mounds, and deer with red ears stopped to stare at him, their eyes eerily thoughtful. A blue glow bobbed in front of him. He sensed that he should follow it. The blue light sparked and whirled, transforming into a human form. It was a man that Ambiorix did not recognize. He smiled at Ambiorix in a proud way.
Do I know you, spirit guide?
The tall man had blonde hair that was spiked on top and flowed down his back like a wild horse's mane. He stood proud and had the fearless air about him of a warrior. There was something oddly familiar about him.
No, you do not know me.
There was a strange sadness in his blue eyes.
Follow me.
He turned and walked forward into the deep woods. Trees grew overhead like an archway, hiding the sky. Ambiorix followed him, aware of all his senses so that he'd be ready for any surprises. They approached a cave, dark and forbidding. The spirit guide turned to him.
You must prepare yourself. As a warrior, you have killed many men, and we are about to enter the labyrinth of the dead.
He stepped inside, disappearing into the dark void. Ambiorix hesitated, wondering how he was going to see in the dark. But then he remembered the powers Brizo had given him. He called on these powers and felt his eyes blaze with brightness. His vision inside the labyrinth was as sharp as daylight because the wolf was a nocturnal beast. A woman in black robes who carried a bright torch appeared in front of them. Three hounds followed her, their yellow eyes glowing in the darkness.
I am Britannia, Queen of the Dead. Only spirits may pass through.
She leaned forward, motioning for them to come closer with a thin, bony finger that glowed white like winter snow. Ambiorix and his spirit guide stepped before her.
You are a spirit and may pass through.
She pointed at the spirit guide.
You.
She pointed at Ambiorix.
You are not a spirit, but the raven spirit is very strong inside of you. You may also pass through.
Her voice was hollow-like, and almost like a whisper carried on a breath of the wind. The stony path descended into a sharp turn. Dampness filled the cavern. Ambiorix walked with caution on the wet, slippery stones. When they reached the third level, a cold wind blew through the cavern. It was like the chill of death, unnatural and biting. His spirit guide turned to him.
Stay with me. Do not leave the path,
he warned. The smell of rotting flesh filled the cave, and wailing beings brushed by like soft bird feathers with sharp claws for edges. The eyes were familiar to him. He tried not to look at them as they flew by, battering his flesh, but he had no choice. His weapons were useless against beings that did not have a corporeal body. The spirits of men he killed swarmed around him like angry bees. They were all men he had killed in battle. He pressed onward, ignoring their torment. Suddenly, a woman's face appeared, lashing out at him with her long fingernails.
Why, Ambiorix? Why did you let me die?
The woman's face was burned beyond recognition, but her dark, mournful eyes were very familiar to him.
Valeria?
The spirit of his dead Roman wife beckoned him with her long, ghostly finger.
Do you want to see the son you killed?
He forgot he was supposed to stay on the path.
Ambiorix, stay on the path!
His spirit guide appeared in front of him.
But...
Valeria's white shrouded body still beckoned him to follow her.
Do not look at her!
Ambiorix centered his thoughts like Brizo had taught him. He avoided eye contact with the ghost of Valeria and followed his spirit guide. His body shook with fear. He had almost lost his way. The demons he fought would be his own. More spirits flew at him. One slammed into him, the force of the spirit almost knocking him over. It was the eyes that had been tormenting him with nightmares. Maximus's ghost glared at him with pure hatred. He tore the arrow out of his chest and aimed it at Ambiorix. Ambiorix thought that a ghost could not physically hurt him, but his instinct told him to duck. The arrow whooshed past his head.
Fight me, Ambiorix!
Maximus seemed to take corporeal shape and stood armed with a spear.
But how?
The centurion charged, and Ambiorix barely had time to raise his shield in defense. The force of the blow knocked Ambiorix backwards. He called on his powers to give him the strength to fight Maximus. The narrow cavern made combat difficult, and one side dropped off into a deep abyss. Ambiorix charged and thrust his spear at Maximus, but the centurion was able to avoid his thrust, pushing Ambiorix backward. He seemed to have powers of his own. Ambiorix teetered on the edge of the chasm, his foot touching a loose stone. He had an idea. Rushing at Maximus, he pushed his way to the other side by slamming him with his shield. Then he rushed him again before Maximus could prepare himself and pushed him towards the loose stone. Maximus wobbled with a wide-eyed look on his face and tumbled over the cliff face, the sound of his body thumping against jagged rocks echoing up to the cavern. Ambiorix breathed a sigh of relief, wiping his sweating brow. His spirit guide waved him onward, down to the next level of the labyrinth.
Remember to stay on the path,
the spirit guide warned once again. Ambiorix used the keen senses of the wolf to detect any other surprise attacks. He was so focused on an ambush that he was caught off guard by the image that approached him. She was naked and glowed white like the moon. Her white wings fanned out around her, and she beckoned him with one long finger.
Nemo?
He was mesmerized by her and took a step toward her.
Come closer, Ambiorix. Her sweet voice soothed him, and he forgot he was supposed to stay on the path. He almost stepped off the side, but halted when the scent of rotting flesh assaulted his wolf-sensitive nose. Nemo smelled like wild flowers, not like rotting flesh.
Be gone with you, demon!
The Nemo-like wraith hissed at him and turned into a hideous creature with boils and long skeletal fingers. Its wispy hair resembled a spider's web, and its wings were tattered and rotting. It sucked in air and blew foul, cold air at him with such force that he felt himself toppling over the edge.
Can their love survive the wrath of the goddesses and an obsessed god? Can Ambiorix save Nemo from her underworld prison without forfeiting his own soul?
I can't wait to read the book now. I want to know what happens.
Yeah, I do too. She's left us right on a cliffhanger there.
She has. We'll definitely have to get hold of that book. Our next piece of music is an evocative song by Sharon Knight called The Song of the Sea from her album of the same name. She rounds off our show by recalling the untiring Celtic spirit and the love of home so often found within the Celtic soul.
Thank you. I cast my life away like stones on the ocean. Weary from the sorrows of my past, I am bruised, but I have never been broken. I am come home at last.
That was beautiful. Thank you, Sharon. Moving on to a promo for you, I'd like to bring you one for the School of Podcasting morning announcements. Dave Jackson brings us a show to go along with his online podcasting school, and I'd like to say a big thank you to him for his show number 155. In this show, he talks about the difficulties that visually impaired people have with a lot of websites, and as podcasts are a great interest to the visually impaired, we should spend more time making our websites friendlier.
Right, that's an absolutely brilliant idea. Thank you, Dave. If you're listening and you find our website hard to follow, drop us a line and let us know which bits are tricky and we'll try to sort them out for you. Another technical job I can leave to you then, dear.
Yes-y, ma'am. Oi, can I leave me cap on this here branch?
Sure. In the meantime, I'll plug on through and make it as easy to use as possible. Here's the promo.
Are you thinking of starting a podcast? Are you a podcaster trying to take your podcast to the next level? Then check out The Morning Announcements. It's the official podcast of theschoolofpodcasting.com, available at schoolofpodcasting.net. Now, we provide tips on podcasting, promotion, as well as interviews with people in the podcasting world. The Morning Announcements is typically 15 minutes or less and is 100% work safe. Check us out at schoolofpodcasting.net. And until then, class dismissed.
Well, that brings the first half of our holiday special almost to a close. In the Northern Hemisphere, we're at the ending of the Celtic year, and the Southern Hemisphere, you're about to experience the joy of Beltane.
Before we go, I'd like to bring you another little phrase in Irish to add to your collection. This one means thank you very much, or more accurately, thank you a thousand times. It is Gora Maragat.
Gora Maragat?
That's right. So I'd like to say Gora Maragat for staying with us for this holiday special.
And we'll see you in part two of the Samhain holiday special.
Slangeboil.
We think this is Srunamoil.
Srunamoil.
Yeah.
Okay. And 300 years on Srunamoil. Okay. and 300 years on Srunamoil.
Your line is next. I don't want to break your meditation or anything, but...
And 300 years on Shulan...
Some are not solely the myths and legend, but rather have an academic bend on them.
Bend on them?
Tooth and...
A legend with a bend?
Interesting.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us a quick email or voice feedback by emailing either Gary, that's G-A-R-Y, or Ruth, R-U-T-H, at CelticMythPodShow.com. You can chat to us in the forums on our website. The show notes for this episode can also be found on the website. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You heard Haghole at the beginning and are listening to The Skylark now. You can find out more about this foot-stomping band at www.sfhounds.com. And thanks again to Diane Arkinstone and Kim Robertson, whose music has been used for some of the incidental music in this podcast. You'll find links to their websites in our show notes.